Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. And when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This episode may contain material which may be unsuitable for some listeners.
My staff who are maintaining this fucking place are not to be going ahead driving with you somewhere.
That's the voice of Peter Nygaard, who is today locked up for the horrific crimes of rape, sex trafficking, drugging, and holding women against their will, sometimes for weeks at a time. It took a very long time for those crimes to surface. For decades, Nygaard lived in plain sight as an international playboy. Nobody really questioned his flamboyant behavior with dozens of women always on his flank. Instead, many were envious of his jet-setting life. And why is that? That's a very good question. Things were very different back in the 70s and the 80s, even the 90s. Men like Peter Nygaard and Hugh Hefner, they got a pass. They were called ladies' men, Casanovas, heartbreakers, and playboys.
Thanks for the disco!
They may have been called naughty, but they were rarely called criminals. The women in their entourage were often considered glamorous and lucky. And that veneer allowed Peter Nygaard to commit his sex crimes one after the other, virtually undetected. But the attitudes of the day weren't the only reason that he could skate under the radar and avoid scrutiny. People were also terrified of Nygaard. They were genuinely terrified.
I want the right people to do the right fucking job every single time, and I want them to be accounted for what they do, like any other place. I want it to be transparent, like every other fucking place.
Boomer!
On the outside, he came across as generous and gregarious, a business tycoon who wanted everyone around him to enjoy the good life.
Hey! That's good!
But behind closed doors, it was Jekyll and Hyde. He was a monster who lured women with his charm and his wealth and his lavish parties, and then unleashed his wrath in the bedroom and in the office, which were often one and the same thing. By now, many know about the sex crimes that he committed, but his abuse of women wasn't only sexual, it was psychological and it was financial. To many who know him, me included, he's a narcissist and an egomaniac who fed on power and control. And that power and control was exerted over everyone, including his women and his own family. Nygaard's niece is Angela Dyborn. She's my childhood best friend, and we grew up together with Uncle Peter. When I went off to college, Angela went off to work for Peter as a single teenage mom. She really didn't have much of a choice. She was pregnant at 17 by a married 35-year-old man. So she dropped out of college and she signed on with Nygaard. At first, Angela was kind of lured by the opportunity. Her uncle was a tycoon who might just bring her up through the family business. But within just a couple of weeks, Angela saw the real Peter Nygaard. This is Angela's story.
We do the real people. That's our marketplace.
You will not find another product as competitively priced as ours.
Welcome back to Uncle Peter, a Drop Dead Serious podcast. When you moved down to Los Angeles from our hometown, from Winnipeg, you took a job with Peter Nygaard's company in the U.S. Yeah. It was a big, big deal.
Yeah.
Describe those early, early times when you had moved to start working for him.
When I first really worked directly for him, and it was something like I'd never experienced before. He had first built me up. I came down to help with a boutique, opening this new store in Beverly Hills. I was built up. And then I was shattered. I was yelled at and screamed at. Things weren't happening on cue or
to his liking.
Speed of like the construction. Permits weren't coming through. But somehow all that wound up my fault. I had nothing to do with creating the project. And I'm very conscientious worker, but everything became my problem. I would show up and he'd show up and he would start screaming. I remember one time I pulled up on site, on the project site. I saw his car there and I vomited in the parking lot because I just had such a reaction.
Anxiety.
This was only a couple weeks, you know, that no more than a month of moving down there.
Wait, within a month of moving down there, you developed an anxiety that made you throw up upon the sight of him at a work site?
I wound up in the hospital for a night, myself and this other girl.
So you get down there, you're a single mom.
Single mom.
Got this young daughter.
Fell in love with who's now my husband, Martin.
So you're setting up a life down there, and you think this job's going to be great. And within weeks, you realize, did you realize it was going to be horrible, or did you think this was temporary?
A bit of both. I knew the reputation because we've obviously now at this point in your life
you've
seen
heard
and yell
things.
At people, but you always kind of thought, you understood that they caused this. So we hadn't experienced it necessarily directly, but what you'd hear is, they made, Peter's explanation afterward, they made me get upset with them. They were the cause of making me.
They were the cause of my rage.
Yeah, the rage.
That was his excuse. Everybody else caused his rage. He had no responsibility for it.
Yep. I kind of thought it might be temporary. I thought, okay, wait, if I can just work harder, do better, work longer, then maybe I can keep him happy and I can build a career and kind of continue and grow with the company.
And did that ever happen?
Nope, it never happened.
Were there like flashes of this is going to be okay? I'm over the hump?
No, there was flashes of let's leave, quit, and then get lured back in. There was some better days than worse days. You could play, people learned how to pit people against each other.
It was like gamesmanship. I'm going to sink someone else so I can survive today.
There were people that played that way.
And did Peter, he know
Peter,
that?
Yeah, Peter pitted people against each other. He was one of the primary people to do that.
It's hard for anybody to understand, but there are some clips that have emerged that show him just filled with like rage and profanity. Was the clips that have aired, are they accurate? Like, is that the way he always was?
They're absolutely accurate.
That is how empty fucking business works, Angela. That is how my fucking business is supposed to be working, Angela.
I want to be sure that there not only is the fucking schedule sent to me, that then it resides in the correct place. It is met with the fucking staff who understands it. With the communication that has occurred. You got that fucking responsibility.
It's in critical, in Marina Admin, critical Comcor Info 2019. There's the staff list, the poker list, in out
log. There's no fucking way that the person that was wrong operating should not be able to find it. There's no
fucking way that that should be readily available. So you also have that fucking responsibility of teaching the next person who's in their training all of the fucking stuff that is supposed to be worked on, and none of it is being worked on.
That was just another Monday, just another... That would happen at least once a day, but most of them multiple times. He'd go on like that. I think the clips people have seen are just minutes. That could go on for hours. You could be... That level of intensity of screaming could go on for hours and hours. If you had him on the phone, it was easier than if you had him in person. If you had him in person, he'd be spitting in your face and looking at you and glaring. And oh, it was frightening. It was just... There was something where someone said he turns into a monster sometimes. He was in full monster mode.
Like a rage monster.
A raging monster.
You obviously had a lot of fucking confusion. Then when the fuck do you get the fucking end of that confusion? Jesus Christ, it's just amazing to me. I said, look at you, somebody else. You look after that information. And it's a complete fucking mess. Every fucking time you phone there, it's a mess.
December 9th, 2018.
I don't want to hear your bullshit. What do you... You want me to come and clean up your fucking mess? Yes. Holy Christ. And now you're sort of explaining that you're not at fault. Now you're saying, oh God, we weren't at fault. Okay, if you weren't at fault, who was at fault? Because there obviously was a fault.
When you first went down to Los Angeles, what was your role? Like, what was your job with NIAGARD?
When I first went down, my job was supposed to be in retail. So I was going to be working with the retail operations. But I very quickly got pulled into the house because I was staying at the Marina facility.
Which was his home base in LA. You had to run it.
Correct.
The Marina, as it was called, was Peter's home in Marina Del Rey, California.
I slowly started to become almost like a house manager. So I started to have to be responsible from everything from the housekeepers to which girlfriends were driving the cars to everything else in where would Peter would be to touch during a trip there. And then when he wasn't there, I was also responsible for doing a lot with his kids, like if paying their different school bills or arranging transportation and travel for them, being basically the step-in surrogate mother without being a parent to them, but the role that what a parent would normally do if your kid's heading off to camp, you're sending them off to camp. I was involved in every single child. Any of the needs, any of the sort of the managing of the their relate of them even trying to reach their dad, trying to reach their father even, like trying to connect them together, trying to remind him, hey, it's your daughter's birthday today. Do you want to send something?
So this is pre-cell phones, and if his children of many different moms or the moms of his children wanted to reach him, they could not. They had to call the office
and then we'd have to transfer them. We'd have to call him. Meanwhile, you're just trying to be business. You're trying to break free of the personal side. But because you're related to him, it was some crazy logic in the company, or I guess.
You owe him.
Yeah, you owe him. And that you're the most natural person to be doing it. My husband, he would do the cooking and look after the housekeepers and that side.
And driving.
And driving. I met him when he was the driving for Peter. And then I would sort of handle the other side, how you'd run a regular house. I was running his house for him that
way. But it was not a regular house. There were a lot of needs.
It was not a regular house. There were a lot of needs.
I remember
a lot
you
of
saying
girls.
That you had like... family, medical, child support, logistics, travel, clothes, shipping, accounting, and that the hours were just like relentless. This is how you described it to me back in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. No, the hours we would start, so he'd want a wake-up call because he doesn't believe in alarm clocks. So you had to be in the office at 6 a.m. to give him his first wake-up call and then run the business side of it as well as whatever anybody else in the household wanted to do for their agendas that day. Into the evening, into the dinner, and then you'd have to be on call until he finally went to bed, which could be 3-4 in the morning, and then you'd start all over again the next day. So you were literally going around the clock.
He wanted people available at his every
available
beck and call.
In his every call. If you got him on a wake-up call and he'd had a bad night, and bad night being he probably didn't have sex or something went wrong, he would be in a horrible mood. It's 6 a.m. He would start laying into you about stuff. Like it could be like just insane things. Like if you're working in the office.
Wait.
Sorry.
He would lay into the person who did the wake-up call.
Yes.
If he woke up on the wrong side of the bed, like with some complaint about something
Anything,
random.
Correct. Yep. If the dinner wasn't right the night before, if somebody got left too early, like he would just, whoever called him on the wake-up call, he would, if he was in that mood, he would just dive right in.
You were in for
and
it.
And it was going to be a very long day. So we started making my daughter do the wake-up calls because he wouldn't yell at her. So we were sending, when he was in town, my 10-year-old daughter would have to go to sleepover parties like with her little alarm clock and make a phone call. I mean, I'm laughing now because it's just listening to me say it.
It's unbelievable.
I kind of sacrificed my daughter, and she didn't get abused. And in fairness,
she didn't get abused.
He loved having her do it. And in the Nygaard world, that was, you know, us getting generation number 3 now into the mix and starting to work. And
everybody's in the industry. And like it's a family. Yeah. It's a family business.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
He did work a lot. I mean, in fairness to him, the work ethic and that drive, especially in the early years, he did build a large company, a successful company, employed thousands and thousands of people. So that side of him, I think, and that really was that 24-hour, 48-hour work and drive that he had early on.
You told me a story about, like, his bathroom habits when he was working at his desk. He wouldn't even break to go to the bathroom.
Oh, later, at the marina, we'd have, the housekeepers would have to go up, and at the end of the night when they go sort of clear his area and tidy up, there'd be bottles and bottles of pee because he would just wind up peeing in a bottle just as he was on the telephone.
At
his desk.
Bottles of pee. At his desk. He wouldn't stop down to literally go to a bathroom.
Yeah. And then,
was that lazy, or was that because he was so focused on the work that he couldn't stop down to go to the bathroom?
I think it was a bit of both. But I think it was just that he was just so into doing the work and he didn't think anything of it. I mean, who cares if someone has to clean up your pee, which is, again, disgusting.
He had a habit of actually going to the bathroom while on business calls.
Yeah.
And did not hide the fact that he was either urinating or worse.
Nope. It was, a lot of us knew it as the waterfall. He would say, oh, I'm standing next to a waterfall, or he'd make some little joke about being close to a waterfall, and that would be him urinating. So after we worked with him for a period of time, it would just be something normal. But I do remember a couple times where you'd be like hiring somebody new in the office, or you'd be on a call, like a training call, and that would happen, and people would just be...
They'd be mortified.
But it was so normal.
Did he have no sense that it was inappropriate to subject his employees to his bathroom habits on work calls?
Bathroom habits, nudity. I mean, he could answer, you know, especially in the residence, he could answer the door in nude. Even going upstairs to bring some paperwork to him, and it could be a couple naked girls in the bed. That wouldn't have been a problem.
It didn't faze him that employees would have to come in the course of business and be subjected to naked women or naked Peter in the office.
In the office. There were no boundaries often between
life and work, work and life.
Even having the bedrooms in the offices, because those two are so connected, if you're working for him, you are subjected to his nudity as well as his business.
And his predilections, yeah. His habits. And he saw nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Peter didn't have any homes. Like, he didn't have a home of his own, but he seemed to set up his homes literally in his office. Yeah. Every office he had had a bedroom suite. Was it for sex, or was it because he literally was a workaholic?
Part of it was that he was a workaholic, and it's an absolutely great reason to have a bed in your suite is because you're a workaholic. But now, looking at it, it was also a very convenient way to also have sex.
What was the pay like? Like, was it worth it? Like, why would you want to work for him?
When I first went down there, I was maybe making $300, $400 every 2 weeks Canadian, because I was still being paid in Canadian, which in American was nothing.
So which would be about $200 to $250 a week American.
Yeah. And that was back in the 90s.
For every 2 weeks?
Yeah, in the 90s.
So $125 a week in the 90s, yeah. U.S. dollars.
Yep.
So he gave you a place to live, gave you a car to drive, and $125 a week.
Yep.
In the 90s.
Yeah, I think Morton, my husband, was maybe making about $400 every couple weeks too. So we were nickel and diming it. From probably mid-90s till the company went into bankruptcy, I was making $25 an hour. I was only ever hourly. Sometimes we'd make $100,000 in the year at $25 an hour. That's a hell of a lot of hours when you're hourly. I mean,
what were your regular work weeks? How many hours?
It just all depended on the projects. So if he was in town, the regular work weeks, I mean, you're working easily 16, 18 hours a day, but we were only being paid to the maximum of 12 hours a day. So we were paid, we'd cap off at 12. So even if we worked 16 hours, we'd only get paid for 12. So you could, 84 hours for the week you were maxed out at. He also had a bonus structure, but most people never got bonuses. He did this bonus. It was a penalizing bonus where he said, it wasn't a performance. He'd say, here's $500. Every quarter you're going to get it as long as you don't break any rules. And the rules weren't like set things you could read and understand and say, okay, I'm cool with not breaking
the rules.
They were
arbitrary.
They changed daily, and you could wake up one morning and all of a sudden you had charges against your bonus, which would pretty much eat up your bonus.
So did anyone actually get the bonus? Or did he find ways to just eat up the bonuses?
For the most part, I'd say he found ways to eat up the bonus. Other people in the company, if you didn't work directly for him, if you're actually working for in more of the corporate side, I think some of those people would get bonuses a bit. But if you worked directly for Peter, there were people in Bahamas that sometimes would owe him money at the end of a week.
The people in the Bahamas that Angela is referring to are Peter's employees at Nygard Key, his tropical home, a multi-million dollar private island resort. It was the scene of an excessively hedonistic lifestyle. Wild, week-long sex parties with women clad only in body paint and feathers, and swingers retreats, complete with awards for who slept with the most people.
The best sexual performance goes to the woman who claims to have had at least 99% of those attendees here, who claims that they were all worth having and all wonderful. And I know she's thinking to herself right now, oh my God, that sounds like me. You're all probably thinking that, but we only know of one who actually laid claim to this trophy. So Sonia, come up here and grab the trophy for best sexual performance. We came up with this trophy, we're calling it the most likely to please, the one that you would definitely want to invite to a swing party, the most functional male and female, most likely to please, the male winner of our most likely to please trophy, Vedran, my brother from Brazil. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Simone to the front to accept the trophy.
It was also the scene of horrific sex crimes, and Peter Nygard was in complete control of everything.
It sounds like he was not only like verbally abusive to you and the other employees who work for him, but also financially abusive.
He kept people poor. He kept people poor. He kept people needing him. And the mental side of it, he'd build you up, and then he'd pull you right down to the point where you were so broken that you felt you couldn't do anything else, that you just had to, hold
stay.
On. You had to stay. You had to hold on a little bit longer.
Because that's what I wanted to ask. Like, what was the hold that he had over employees? Why would people stay with someone so abusive?
There's so many different scenarios. People that were healthy left. A lot of people that were healthy, they were gone.
But the relationship Angela had with her uncle was anything but healthy.
You'd be in the Bahamas and working, and you'd go down with a team, so you kind of tended to work with the same teams often in different events. And you had to have your event team all laying on the floor, practically crying, trying to figure out who's going to go tell Peter that something happened because everybody's so brutalized and beaten down.
You've described some phone calls to me that are unbelievable unless you hear them. Describe what he used to do on the phone regularly.
Show us what the f***ing thing. Make some f***ing sense. Show us the reason we have this kind of idiotic shit that's going on right now. And that schedule then is going to be very clearly laid out in the exact place in that goddamn wall, whether it's posted in the wall, whatever. And it's just going to be just piled up in a bunch of shit. This fucking operation is not going to be run the way you run your fucking life.
Okay. So you could be on a screaming phone call with him 30 minutes to 4 or 5 hours.
4 or 5 hours of a phone call?
Of us just screaming about nonsensical stuff. And just when you start to get him to calm down and you start to mellow out, he tried to get you to engage. But if you didn't engage with him, he'd mellow out, but he'd shoot right back up and pick a different issue to get upset about.
That is what the f***ing job they do there. Show us the f***ing thing. Now, where is that list? Tomorrow's pamper party. Who is working on that now? Today is when we do the pamper party.
Jonna is working on the pamper day.
It was illogical. And people say, why don't you hang up? If you hung up, he would call you right back. If you didn't answer from him, somebody else would call you back. If you didn't answer to them, you'd be fired. We were traveling. We went on a camping trip as a family. We did the whole trip from Southern California, from Los Angeles, up to the Central Coast, set up camp, did two or three other things. So, you know, a good 6-7 hour block. I was on the same phone call that entire time.
6 to 7 hours,
the same phone call.
Phone call of relentless abuse.
Yeah.
The phone call was just to point out whatever he thought was wrong and how you were all at fault.
Yes, your thinking is wrong. Yes. You are always wrong. Yes. If we establish one fucking system and one disclosure is, you guys are always wrong. This is just a perfect example of you being always wrong. You've never yet been right. And now you make it seem like whose fault this is now?
It was like he was just fixated on a torrent of abuse. It almost sounds like psychological torture.
Oh, it's absolutely psychological torture. Emails made it easier because with emails, you could at least like email each other back and forth and you get screaming emails. You get things in red, bold,
all caps,
97, yeah. All caps. But back then, when you got that type of memo, then you were obligated, though, to call him to discuss what the issue is. So you'd get it on paper and then you'd get it on the phone.
It just seems like someone who was so successful had lost the plot, was spending untold energy and time on useless things, like huge time wasters as well, not just abusing your employees, but just an ineffective use of your 4 hours to just berate someone.
You know, it was. And that's sort of one of the ultimate downfalls of the company, right? The company was a successful company. He was a tough boss. Some areas in there were great. He was a taskmaster. You learned how to do things and you worked at a very high level
of detail.
Yeah. That's a skill that most people, you know, well, you can carry anywhere. Where it crossed the line, sort of, was when it started to really become those irrational, time-wasting The focus
fixations.
Switched, yeah.
I mean, irrational fixation seems to be the perfect description for why he would spend upwards of 7 hours on the phone screaming.
Jesus Christ, you just continue to run around with these fucking silly fucking excuses. What don't you get? That is what you do there at that office.
I mean, I would shower with my phone. Like, I'd have to put my phone in a plastic bag, put it inside just in case I got a call. Because if you didn't pick up that phone call, whatever you were calling about might have been a simple
issue. You hear about it.
But if you didn't pick up that phone call on the first ring, which was the top rule of the company-wide, that phones must be answered at all times, it would just, the hell to pay from not doing it would be worse than what you're actually picking up a call for.
And you, what you, did make it fear me? It's f***ing chaotic, Angela. It is f***ing chaotic the way you and Morton run that f***ing place.
Angela and her husband Morton eventually reached a breaking point. The abuse simply became too much, and she quit. Not once, but several times. But like so many other abuse victims, Angela always went back.
So shortly after starting to work with him, I lasted maybe 8 months, then we decided to quit. And he kicked us out of the property, and my daughter was still in school, so I was trying to hold on until just she'd finished school and her school year. But
So you quit, and he instantly evicted you, his own niece. Like, you're out.
Yep.
Get out. I don't care that you brought your daughter all the way from another country to live and work here. You're evicted.
If you don't follow by my rules, you're out of here. And it's no different than what he'd do to girlfriends as well. If they didn't follow the rules, they're out of there.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Morton once wrote a memo to Peter about how relentless and abusive the work environment was. And it sort of had at the top, like, get off our back or something like that.
We called the get off our back memo, yes.
What was Peter's reaction to it?
Peter's reaction was a 2-page message back to me, memo, about all the failings and inadequacies of my husband, how that he had no right to say that, that he's the boss, and that by Morton saying that to him, by telling him to, you know, to back off a bit, that we were out of there, that we'd made a choice, that we...
Oh, that was it. You were
that
done.
Was it. We were it.
That Both of
it.
You.
We're done.
I'm holding copies of the letters from back in 1994 that Angela just referred to. Morton's letter in handwriting entitled, Get Off Our Back. In it, he says that they are quitting. And he writes that he's worried about his wife, saying this, I'm tired of seeing Angela with tears in her eyes every time she talks to you. I'm tired of seeing her crying. He continues, we are working extremely hard from early morning to late at night. And when we are not in the office, we're across the street, one phone call away. And then Peter's response is a typed letter dated March 20, 1994, which references misguided judgment.
Let me read from it. What amazes me is your misguided judgment that Morton can take such an aggressive attitude and not expect ramifications and still continue to hold the accommodations aggressively like some kind of squatter does indeed continue to add fuel to the fire. I do not accommodate anybody who intends on doing battle with his boss. And then he continues to say, if you or Morton are not prepared to live with your emotional outburst decision, then you beg for forgiveness. But don't tell me that you are doing me a favor or that I have some obligation to either of you.
Fired and evicted.
And I even tried to say, hey, can we try to balance this out? Can we try to make this work? Can we have a cooling down period? But it was, I think he ended it with, you people don't get it. Get the fuck out of my life.
You quit a lot.
I did.
How many times?
At least a half a dozen. I think I was fired 2 or 3 times and I'd quit at least a half a dozen.
Why did you keep going back?
And I've asked myself that often. Family. I mean, you can't quit your family, right? Like, it was still, at the end of the day, it was still family. There's different situations at different times when I went back. If you quit work, you're also quitting your family. My mom was still my mom, but my grandma, who I love dearly, she pretty much had to shun you. She pretty much couldn't, you could talk on the phone, but you couldn't expect them to go down to the Bahamas for Christmas.
So you weren't going to be with the extended family for Christmas. There'd be no visiting grandma, grandpa anymore. Like literally, if you quit Peter's employment, you'd be shunned by the family.
You're quitting the family. If you're quitting the company or if you've been fired by Peter, it's clearly you've done something wrong. And if you've done something wrong to Peter, then you've done something wrong to him. I did something wrong to my grandparents.
Family loyalty was another control mechanism that was weaponized by Nygaard. Loyalty that was perhaps ingrained in Peter as a young child. He, along with his mother, his father, and his sister, were immigrants from Finland, arriving in the frigid Canadian prairies to live in a coal shack. They were dirt poor, and they survived together as a unit with one stove and 2 beds. They really only had each other. I asked Dr. Julian Goger, a forensic psychiatrist, about family loyalty and the abuse of it.
Nygaard's niece worked for him on and off for 30 years. She said she was, you know, fired and quit about a half dozen times, but every time went back. And when I asked her why she would go back to such an abusive boss, her uncle, she said leaving the company was like leaving your family and that you'd be shunned. Can you speak to that dynamic?
You know, with family, there's another component that we have to understand, and that is attachment. Attachment runs deep. Attachment begins fairly early on in life, and it's difficult to sever that attachment. So that's just why many people stay in bad relationships, people stay in bad companies, people stay in bad jobs, because they develop a variety of attachments, and the attachments fulfill certain needs that the person might have, or the person might not be able to extricate themselves from unhealthy attachments because of those needs.
It wasn't just family that Peter Nygaard kept under his thumb. He used the same dynamic on his girlfriends when he promised them modeling careers and provided them a place to live. Peter had to control everyone and everything, and always on his terms.
There was kind of a progression where there'd be people that would be brought in as a girlfriend, but to be able to give them, like in the Hef model, to be able to give them their allowance, Hef gave an allowance, Peter gave him pay, put him on payroll, and they had to sort of perform different jobs. There'd be dog walkers, and there'd be coffee carters, and just all these different
mail
roles.
Mail collector. I remember you told me that some of the women who lived in his Los Angeles
house back in the day would have to bring
had
mail.
Roles. They had defined roles: dog walker, mail collector. Kitchen tidier.
They'd help with the housekeeping.
Maker.
Pretty much, yeah.
But they were all in their 20s. They were all around the same age as us.
Because I was like really early on when you first came down. That's right.
I remember thinking it was
creepy.
Yeah.
Not illegal. They seemed to all be of age and they all seemed to be very willing. But I remember thinking, this is the creepiest guy. Like, yeah. He's not what I used to think he was. He's creepy.
And that was just growing. It was going to get creepier later on. So, yeah, no, there was different roles. He would wind up with a girl who would spend the night, and he'd want to move her in into the staff apartments. All this structure of rules and keeping everybody else at a really financially low
survival rate mode
where you're just, you know, you're... there's a layer of people that you bond with. You have a lot of trauma bonds. So you also don't quit or you come back because you want to make sure that the person you left is not going to suffer, that you can kind of help support them.
With all the other employees who got abused in this way, financially, physically sometimes, obviously, and mentally and verbally. Like, how much did you guys bond over that?
So because I was connected, you know, and part of that family and sort of my trust circle was a little bit tighter, tighter circle. So there's maybe 8 of us that were very tight and commiserated all the time.
I was so mad, though, when you would tell me how he, like what you were making.
Yeah.
Because I kept saying, like, Angela, you're always working. You are literally at his beck and call. You're driving at 3 o'clock in the morning, some shipment somewhere, you know, oh, pick up this box of something that came to the airport, the clothes have arrived and get it.
Drive this girl back to San Diego at 2 in the morning.
Yeah. And yet all that time I thought you were making a fortune because you were working for such a tycoon. And then when you sort of broke it to me that you could barely make ends meet, I said, well, why do you stay? What would happen if you stood up to Peter, either to challenge him or to give him advice to save him from himself?
Most of the time you wouldn't.
Why?
He does not accept being wrong ever. So his reaction, depending on who the person is, would either to completely annihilate you by yelling at you and by berating you and screaming and pushing back at you for hours and hours on end. You could get fired. People were terrified of him. You just never knew. We had this thing, don't make eye contact when he's walking through the building. When he's walking through the building, everybody, they either ran and hid, like literally hid. People would hide. Or you look at somebody else, you do something else. If he caught it, you were standing there, it's too late to hide, then you just don't make eye contact.
Critics will say it was just a job. That employees like Angela could leave at any time. That if they enabled Peter's crimes and the abuse of women and girls, that they should share the blame. But it may not be quite that simple, according to forensic psychiatrist, Dr. Julian Goger.
Can you help me to understand the people who worked for Peter Nygaard regularly were berated, abused? They were financially penalized for rules that, you know, heretofore had not existed. He exacted a power structure and a control over his family and over his employees that I've never seen before. They seem to operate in constant fear. If they supported Peter Nygaard in his transgressions, how culpable are they?
There are different degrees of culpability, and it depends on the motivation of each individual under that hierarchy. So each individual has to be assessed at a unique level and understood as to what degree they complied with, went along with a certain behavior as perpetrated by a person in power and authority. So it's a difficult question to answer because there's no blanket culpability. The culpability depends on each individual's circumstance. And therefore, it should be contextualized.
Does it make a difference when you're dealing with someone like Peter Nygaard, who was so psychologically abusive and financially abusive to his staff, to the people who worked for him? Is that something that needs to be taken into account when looking at whether they had any culpability in his crimes?
It does need to be taken into consideration. And it's difficult for sometimes the person who's in that abusive situation to extricate themselves because they feel trapped. And that might be one extreme where the person becomes helpless. And then rather than blame the victim, it's to understand the victim's perspective of how they feel trapped in that situation. And that, again, might go to the heart of the issue of culpability.
When you talk about family members, there were a number of Peter Nygaard's family members that worked in the Nygaard organization. And although none of them has been charged, many critics believe that they supported Peter Nygaard and should be, you know, shouldering the blame. But at the same time, a family dynamic is different. Can you explain how someone in a family dynamic has a different added layer? Because they're also employees.
Well, family may have a different relationship with the individual, and the individual may relate to family members in a different manner. So again, without talking about Mr. Nygaard, I'm talking about it in a general context. We have to evaluate each family member and the nature of the dynamics between that family member and a person in authority, and what are the advantages that that person might receive, whether they be financial, social, or even media attention if the person's in a public forum. So to say that one shoe fits all would be wrong. Each person may have a unique association with the person in power and control. And that doesn't apply to Mr. Nygaard alone. It applies to people all over the world in positions of power and authority and who have money.
In fact, Peter Nygaard's family stuck by him. They defended him against multiple lawsuits that accused him of sexual assault. Angela knew her Uncle Peter was a cruel boss and a sleazy womanizer too. But it took a long time before she could really admit that the atrocities he was accused of were actually true.
How did you finally see the light and go from defender to believer?
It was a bit of a process because at first I absolutely was a defender. I'd been a defender my entire life and conditioned to defend. I think after that first case and after the first iteration of the class action was one of the first times that I started looking at what nuggets of truth are in here, not what nuggets of lies.
And the truth started lining up. I mean, even just the filthy stories of his kink matched what you had to face. You'd see some detail that didn't match up, and you'd seize.
I mean, maybe that's a self-protection thing, right? Like, you don't want to see it. Like, this is this person that has, as crappy as he's been to you all his life.
It's Uncle Peter.
It is still Uncle Peter. Still my uncle. And all through time, you've only ever been conditioned to say, no, no, this isn't true, this isn't true, this isn't true. And it's like, holy hell, fuck, this is true. It's heartbreaking. And it's left a path of destruction.
Much more on the path of destruction Peter Nygaard left in his wake on the next episode of Uncle Peter. You've been listening to Uncle Peter, a Drop Dead Serious podcast. If you or someone you know has been a victim of sexual assault, please, please call your local sexual assault hotline.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.